We're back. Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. And you can check us out, taylor-report.com. And we're on Facebook.
We have a Facebook page, Taylor
Things
Report.
Have happened, man.
Taylor Report on
it's
Facebook.
It's moving.
Yeah.
It's far out.
We didn't even have a fax machine last year. Now we got a Facebook page.
The next thing you know, there'll be pictures and everything. And anyhow, this is the Taylor Report, and we're going to be speaking fairly shortly, we hope, with Portia Karagea. And I tell you in the news, which is why it's so important we do talk to her today, that in South Africa there is a diplomatic battle has broken out, an undiplomatic battle. The government of South Africa has expelled six Rwandan members of their diplomatic corps, and I'm sorry, I got it backwards, three. And then Rwanda responded by expelling six South Africans. And then in the case of South Africa, we learned that they have also expelled a Burundian diplomat, saying he was involved. So this is very important news. I regret to say that the media here has not been paying very close attention to it, not sufficient. And so I think our listeners and many Canadians will be kind of shocked as the facts emerge. But we are joined now by Portia Karagea. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
How do you do? By the way, Portia, I want to say on behalf of our program, we have followed the matters within the country of Rwanda, and we've gotten to know many of the personalities. And it is very sad news, the murder, assassination of your father in South Africa on the evening of New Year's Eve. We know that there's the world suddenly sat up and began to pay attention to the kind of crisis Rwanda is experiencing as a result of that assassination. But this is now there's added news here in relation to the assassination of your father, in that a companion of his, General Yamwasa,
yes,
has had a third attempt on his life within the past week, and another attempt to kill him. And this has led to a serious falling out between the government of South Africa and the government of Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you, you were in Washington, I believe, for a memorial service. Could you tell us what sort of gathering was it? What was that you must have come away with a sort of a message or a sense of how people in the Rwandan exile community are reacting to all these events?
Yes, well, the memorial was on Saturday, and it was a lovely event, and it's always, the worst that has happened, at least for our family, has happened, but there's been such a tremendous amount of support, and I, of course, I'm constantly surprised to see how many people come up to us and tell us how sorry they are, and, you know, that they feel our pain, and they know, those who knew him feel compelled to do something, hence the memorial service. It wasn't even so much organized by our family as the people who supported him and feel badly for what has happened. Because, mm-hmm, of course, as I'm sure you heard, there was a bit of a kerfuffle, I would say, over where he would be buried. And
yes,
so we had to end up being in South Africa, which is pretty far, as you know, for takes about 2 days from Canada to get back there. So mm-hmm, not many people could attend, which is why these additional ceremonies are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I came away with sort of a sense of, I guess I would say, a hope, and mm-hmm, at least like a knowing that now people are a lot less, at least the Rwandans in exile, as you said, who have a bit of backbone and aren't so afraid. They're a little more motivated now, because this was it was just so devastating and so awful in the manner in which it happened. And if you know a bit of the story from the beginning of what I would call sort of my dad's persecution, everyone kind of knew that he was innocent of everything that he was being accused of. But, you know, nobody wants to make a big fuss or a big noise because, well, you know, he's got his issues with, the presidency, and it's something that's a bit above everyone, and no one wants to get involved. A big adjective, at least the word that I would use for sort of a driving motivator in Rwanda in the community, especially in the country itself, is sort of self-preservation, because anyone could be next, and you don't know what to say, you don't want to say anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been difficult, but my hope is just that it will be better, and that's sort of the sense I came away with, is that people are a lot more motivated. Those who had, initiative from the beginning sort of at home by themselves are a lot more motivated to sort of speak out more forcefully now. Mm-hmm. Even me, like, I would never be involved in this, but since this has happened, mm-hmm. I'm quite happy to speak to anyone who wants to hear the story so that they know.
Well, in terms of getting to know the story, your father was a prominent, many would say, one of the key individuals in the Rwanda Patriotic Front. He was one of the original members. He was one of those who, I believe he was actually a member and participant before the mm-hmm. President Paul Kagame, the man who's called the president now. Mm-hmm. And he went through all of this. I think the world was shocked. First of all, they were shocked by the manner and the brazenness of the assassination. But then within days, strange remarks were being made mm-hmm. by prominent figures, mm-hmm. in not just pundits, but these were people holding cabinet positions.
Yeah,
the president made some strange remark about if we can believe this, at a prayer meeting.
Yeah.
Where he said, this is what happens to people. Mm-hmm. And then later, an international gathering in Switzerland, he said, we didn't do it, but I wish that we had.
We had, yeah.
And there was also Twitter remarks made, some of them absolutely, I guess the word, it seems to be an old word now, fascistic, but talking in the most brutal way about your father. How do you account for that? I mean, these are people who knew him rather well, and by the way, many of them must owe part of their careers to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, I honestly don't know what to say to that. Like, I'm not such a person. I couldn't fathom my brother and I, because it was my brother who'd initially, I think, tweeted in response to the Minister of Foreign Affairs, who had said, you can't expect pity. This man was a self-declared enemy of the state. And, I mean, to them, like, opposing or having difference with the current regime, that is immediately puts you in a state of enmity as opposed to just, being of difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't account for why they say those things. I mean, like I said earlier, I would imagine it's self-preservation. I think they're so afraid of what might happen to them should they seem to be not towing the line that they take it to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be what I would hope, at least, because I can't imagine that anybody could be motivated to behave that way. I mean, he was tweeting directly to the children of people who had just lost their father, whose father had just been found strangled to death.
Mm-hmm.
And she appeared to have absolutely no qualms about telling us, if he lived that way, it's his own problem, and not even a bit of sympathy. I mean, you could say, look, I'm sorry for your loss, and let the investigation ensue and sort of remain diplomatic. And mm-hmm. even in the president's statement at that prayer meeting you're talking about, he said he has no time sort of to be politically correct or diplomatic about these things. And, if you're against Rwanda, you face the consequences. And, I mean, to me, that's astonishing. Like, I'm not a expert politician, but I imagine as a president, your job is to be diplomatic and presidential.
And a little bit
exactly.
above personal.
I think that's actually part of the actual function of your office.
Yes.
So it's to mm-hmm. me, it's shocking, but also not surprising, because obviously...
Well, it seems to make your father's case. By the way, your father wrote very eloquently, and there is a letter, fortunate. One of the last bits of correspondence was he outlined his position in a letter to, I think it was a Reverend Cole. I'm not sure the name, but I really hope people will go and find that, because he tells considered way, very nice language, why it's necessary to alter this regime and bring it into alignment with some kind of law and international principles about what constitutes democracy, et cetera.
Yes. I mean, yes, that letter you're speaking about, and even sort of the founding document of the Rwanda National Congress, which was him along with three other gentlemen's party, it says pretty much the same thing as you read in that letter, and they only want, like, real freedom for Rwanda. And peace, I mean, one of the things they keep alleging is, like, they wanted some sort of violent revolt, and they want to harm Rwandans, and that's the exact opposite of the case.
Yeah.
I'm really glad
you underlined that point, that because, of course, we all understand enemies and terrorists, et cetera. The whole world is concerned. But I certainly never saw in any statement by your father or the organization, Rwanda National Congress, the kind of position that's being attributed to them by the present regime there in Rwanda.
No, he was not about being violent. And I mean, most people, a lot of people have come in there because he was very not that as bitter as you would think someone would be. And his position was that President Kagame should be taken to court and tried for his crimes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you would think he'd want something awful to happen to him as well as the same things he went through. But, I mean, that's just talking now. I'm just being personal about the kind of man that my father was. But definitely, I would state unequivocally that they are not looking for some sort of violent outbreak in Rwanda. That country has seen enough violence as it is.
We're speaking to Portia Karegeya, whose father was assassinated on, I guess it was New Year's Day, 2014.
He was found. Yeah, he was found on New Year's Day.
That's when he was found. I mentioned there's been these quite dramatic events in the past few days with the government of South Africa showing serious displeasure with Kigali. Can you tell us what you know of that and what you think about it?
His former colleague, General Kayumba Nyamwasa, his residence, which was actually a safe house, was attacked, and there were about 8 gunmen, I believe, who just like broke in, and they disarmed sort of the police who were there, and they went through the house just looking for the people. And from what I know is that the intelligence people there had gotten wind of this planned situation, and they had managed to remove their family before anything had happened to them. Mm-hmm. And so I believe they found links to certain key Rwandan government representatives in South Africa, and then they expelled them, and Rwanda has now also expelled people, sort of a tit-for-tat going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pretty, I mean, for me, it's great, you know, because it's about time. I mean, in 2010, he was attacked, and that was actually, at that point, that's when my father and Kayumba and then their colleagues put together this party. Because initially, you know, you kind of just hope you can move into civilian life. You've just fled a country. It's exhausting. But they felt motivated. They thought, now we have to do something. Because the style, their modus operandi, is they will follow you to the ends of the earth you know, as he says, he'll use a hammer to kill a fly or a rat or something, to stomp out to crush a fly. And it's a bit too extreme.
The third attempt is just so surprising, and I suppose the entire Rwandan exile community has to understand just what you said, that they actually don't understand limits. They will come apparently, so long as there's someone who will do a dirty deed for money, they will just ask him to do it.
Yeah, I mean, for my father specifically, I think I know at least of at least two, but there may have been three people who had the same mandate to come and take him out, so to speak, and they didn't do it. But, you know, of course, you'll find someone who will, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that this person followed through this time. It's an extreme intolerance of dissidents in any form. And I would stress that it's not just my father. There is, like, so many others who suffered in whatever way. Journalists, most independent journalists live in exile, and they blog. They can't write in any sort of real publication that would come out, especially not in Rwanda. And Victoire Ingabire, who was the presidential candidate back in 2008, she's still sitting in jail just because she wanted to stand.
Yes,
you know,
with her head shaved in a pink uniform.
Yes, exactly, and all that. So my dad is the most well-publicized, mm-hmm. but he's not an isolated incident. And even the U.S. State Department stated soon after my father's assassination, they had said, you know, they're worried about these murders that appear to be politically motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And they are politically motivated. And, they will say the investigation's going on, there hasn't been proven a link, and so on and so forth. But for us Rwandans, we know. It's not a big secret to us that we are run, you know, that it's a dictatorship. And, you know, it's tolerated for as long as, I guess, we allow it to be. To mm-hmm. me, I just hope that, because people live in so much fear. I don't know how to express it to you. Like, after my father died, I have relatives who still live in Rwanda, and they're not allowed to cry because it's the equivalent of, like, they would say, you can't cry for Osama, you know? Mm-hmm. He was a terrorist. He wasn't for our country. He was against us. And they run the social lives, the things you can speak about, the things you can say. People don't text. People don't call each other. Whose number is in your phone, you know? It's, mm-hmm. it's that sort of state. People are in a constant state of fear, and it is not okay. And mm-hmm. so for me personally, at least for what I feel like my dad has died for, is to send a big message that this isn't, because it's a pretty narrative. That's what we've mm-hmm. gotten used to. This country that was, you know, they had this genocide and it was devastating, and out came this hero, and now all this economic development. But people are not okay. And he is a dictator, and this is what he does. He murders anyone that is against him. He kills them. That is what he does.
Yes.
And so, for me, I would just like for people to know this is not a president. This is, you know, for lack of a better term, this is a serial killer, you mm-hmm. know, and he's running a country. And people should not, I just feel like we shouldn't talk about anything else, you know, yes. this economic development. And there's 50% gender equality in the, you know, in the government. We always mm-hmm. talk about how well women are represented in the government in Rwanda. They're like number one or something. And I feel like you cannot talk about the positives because the negative is just so negative.
Also, you'd have to ask those women why they don't care about Victoire Ingabire, who's a woman.
Again, they can't. It's self-preservation over there, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard because I think we've, in a way, we've dug our own sort of this grave that we're in where you kind of, like, if you do speak out, you risk your own life. And, you know, people do value their lives. And I understand for you, the people who keep quiet, who have to be bystanders. It is so much easier for me sitting here far away. Mm-hmm. I don't have my own children. I don't have a husband that I have to worry about mm-hmm. if, you know, something goes wrong. And so I sympathize, but I also feel like we'd have to consider the cost, because it looks like things would come to a very bloody, awful head before they get any better, which would be very sad.
Yes, it is. I think the world has to understand your father was martyred for a cause of ending this terrible situation, and the Rwanda National Congress is doing it. And now we have an international issue. This is going to be argued in front of the whole world, the behavior of that government by the South African government. They're going to raise it. So, Portia Kerrigan, we thank you very, very much. And again, we are very sorry about the assassination. But your father served a good cause, and he's going to be remembered and understood, and people are going to appreciate his struggle. And thank you very, very much. That's Portia Kerrigan, and this is the Taylor Report. It's CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm, and we're on the web, taylor-report.com, and then as I said, we're on Facebook, and I don't know what I mean by that, but we definitely are. So you can, and this program and previous ones are available, will be available there. If you didn't, if you need further on the matter that we were just referring to, I would recommend there's a website, greatlakespost.org. It's glpost.org to get information concerning Colonel Patrick Kageyo, who was assassinated in South Africa. And, of course, today's news is that the South African government has expelled the members of the Diplomatic Corps of Rwanda. Rwanda has responded by expelling members of South Africa's Diplomatic Corps, but a new twist in the story is that South Africa has also expelled a Burundian diplomat and their statement was that he was involved in this latest attempt, and it was quite dramatic. There are some details I could tell you that I've read that just we'll see whether they're confirmed, but apparently one story is that the South African authorities were alerted to the attempt that was going to take place and had removed General Yamwasa, which is why the assassins were thwarted. They came with AK-47s, which I'm thinking of the death of Seth Senushanga, who had been the Minister of the Interior in Rwanda. He was assassinated with AK-47s or Kalashnikovs. I'm not an authority. I'm an M1 guy. I learned the M1 and the BAR, and I'm done. Seth Senushanga criticized Paul Kagame. He left the Rwandan government after 1 year of service and said that he felt his life was in danger. He went to neighboring Kenya. An assassin shot him and did not kill him. He was wounded, and the assassin wounded also the man in the car with him. The man who was driving the car was died of his wounds. By the way, you always feel sorry because here's someone who's, we don't even know, frankly, any longer his name, but he was Seth Senushanga, a relative of Seth Senushanga's. He just happened to be there. He was wounded and died of the wounds. Seth Senushanga lived further and tried to tell the world that something needed to be done about this general who had seized power in Rwanda. And the Kenyan authorities apprehended a gentleman from the Rwandan embassy. He had the gun on him. The weapon that was used was on him. And they gave him diplomatic immunity, and he was permitted to leave the country. And then people thought, well, you know, maybe they've learned their lesson, you know. And about 6 months later, Seth Senushanga was parked at about 4:30 in the afternoon downtown traffic in Nairobi. It was raining that day. I happened, by the way, to have been in Nairobi that day myself. Two men in motorbikes with machine guns, I'll call them, came and killed him and his driver. And this time they made sure. And a very interesting, to me, parallel with General Yamwasa. There have been three attempts on him. And this last one, they brought six guys with plenty of firepower. So now the question is, what does South Africa do to deal with that kind of activity within their country? And we're going to find out.